Hello, and welcome to another episode of Working Overtime, our bi-weekly advice-focused episode. I'm your host, Ronald Young Jr.
And I am your other host, Isaac Butler. So, Ronald, always good to see you. What are we talking about today?
All right, Isaac. This week we have a listener email from Sharon, who is a writer, and Sharon says,
I suppose this is mostly for nonfiction writers, but could also be for other kinds of art. And maybe fiction writers? For sure it would be good for screenwriters. And maybe you've already addressed this and I'm just forgetting, but I'm curious about collaboration. How does one choose a collaborator? If one does, in fact, get to choose, what pitfalls should one be aware of before, during, or after? And what are some best practices for collaborating with someone else?
I love this question because I love collaboration. I think it's important for making good creative work. Much of my collaboration has been in audio production specifically, but Isaac, how do you feel about collaboration and creative work generally?
Well, you know, I cut my teeth in theater, so like, for most of my life, collaboration has been like the thing that was front of mind all the time in my creative projects. You know, I started as a professional actor when I was quite young, 12, you know, and so that whole thing where like you get some people together and they make something greater than the sum of what either of them could have done on their own that isn't exactly what anyone would have done if they got to make up their mind 100% of the time, but something more interesting's come out of it. Like, that's incredibly beautiful and moving to me, genuinely. And my first book was collaboratively written. You know, I consider the writer-editor relationship collaborative. I consider our relationship here on Working, you know, both all three of the hosts and both of the producers. That's very collaborative. So I guess you could say collaboration rules everything around me.
Groan, Isaac. Groan.
When you're a dad, the government actually sends you a book in the mail about the kind of jokes that you have to make now. And so I just, like, if I didn't do it, they'd imprison me. I'm sorry. It's just the rules.
The corniness does make the point, Isaac. You are steeped in a world of collaboration. I've had good and bad experiences with collaborators. And in those experiences, I've learned that choosing the right collaborator is a critical decision. So I really had to start thinking about what type of work I want to make and how collaboration can fill in those gaps. Then I start looking for folks who have addressed those gaps in their work and think about what I can do that might be able to bolster their work as well. So how do you go about choosing a collaborator?
It is such a big challenge. You know, they say that like half of directing is casting, sometimes more than half of directing is casting, you know, because if you cast your show wrong, you're really fucked right out of the gate. And if you choose the wrong collaborators, you'll be really hobbled by having to manage them and the collaborative relationship all the time. So, you know, what I really look for in a collaborator is someone who I feel is honest, generous, and open to both giving and receiving feedback. We're all going to have to put our egos aside, even when we are at our most vulnerable, because making anything creative that's worth making is a vulnerable experience, you know? What you don't want is someone who is quote unquote nice. In other words, you know, a very genial person who you might like very much, but who avoids conflict instead of figuring out how to have conflict in a way that is productive and not hurtful and et cetera, and so forth. Another thing, although this can be really hard to figure out in advance, if your project has deadlines, make sure your collaborator is someone who does not have a history of totally blowing them. You know, whether that's learning their lines on time, if it's an actor, or, you know, finishing a script or whatever it is. Like, if you're doing a collaboration, you've each got stuff to do, you know, you don't want to be going crazy trying to force someone to do their job.
That's fair. I think part of the nice thing is, I think if you're veering away from conflict, you're not actually effectively collaborating, because in a lot of collaboration is a little bit of conflict. It doesn't necessarily have to be combative, but in some cases that conflict is what actually makes the project grow. So I really appreciate that. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk more about collaborative work.
Hey listeners, Isaac Butler here. Do you have any tips or questions about the creative process? Well, get in touch and share your advice or your struggles. You can email us at workingatslate.com, or even better, you can call us and leave a message at 304-933-9675. That's 304-933-WORK. All right, now back to the show.
We are back. and we're still talking about collaborative work. Isaac, I want to tell you about some of my terrible experiences I've had in collaboration.
I love it. Let me get a spoon and a bowl so I can eat this shit up.
So I remember one time I shared an idea with a friend of mine who got really excited about the idea, went off on his own and started writing a version of it. And I remember he came back to me and started dictating to me how the idea was going to go. And I remember just every answer he was saying, I'm like, no, 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 that's not what we're doing. No, that's terrible. No, that's not what I want to do. I said, you can't just run off and do my idea for yourself. And I remember he called it an example of parallel thought, as in we're both thinking about the same thing coming together. And I said, no, I gave you an idea stub. You ran off and made it something else. So you can't use it in that way.
Right.
I remember the second terrible collaboration story I have is I remember I was working with this person and we never came to a decision on who had the final edit of the episode that we were working on We were both being very nice. We were both not trying to rock the boat. And what came down to those final moments where we were both about to publish in our respective feeds, I remember being extremely irritated by the end because I felt like there was stuff that was not being heard. There were edits I don't think that this person was in the right place to make. And eventually we kind of made our episodes and they are a little bit separate, but we ended up quibbling on the smallest of things down to like the last second before we're about to post, mostly because we never had those conversations up front. And I think like someone not understanding your idea and making it worse, or someone not setting clear expectations up front, those are just a few of the pitfalls of collaborative work. But what about you, Isaac? What are some pitfalls you've seen in collaborative work?
I will say both of those experiences sound like nightmares. And the second one, though, points to something really important, you know, before I get to my own examples, which is, you know, every time I've had a collaboration where there was some kind of big fight towards the end, even when I've still thought at the end of that fight, actually, I was right. You know, I've also always been like, I should have said something before it was this bad.
Yeah.
I should have said something earlier. I should have had a disagreement early on so that I didn't have to have a big blow up with someone later on, you know,
yes.
Even if I still agreed with my own position or anything, right? It's not that I was being an asshole or whatever. It's just like, if only I had had the courage to just have this disagreement, you know, this person probably would have had a reasonable response and we could have figured it out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or not, but then I would have known earlier on.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. Almost every bad collaborative experience I've had was the result of one of or both of the following. First, an unclear or muddy hierarchy or vague role descriptions, and two, some basic lack of respect between the collaborators, right? I'll give you two examples. One of them was I was directing this play. And this was very early on. I was like 24. So I'm like a couple years out of college. Everyone in the cast is someone I know personally. They're all kind of friends of mine. And this created this like really muddy environment because as the director, I'm supposed to be leading them and giving them notes, criticizing them and all this stuff. But as their friend, I just didn't really want to do that. That was very uncomfortable to do. And there was one actor, well, really two actors who sort of started to take advantage of that. And then their taking advantage of that eventually became like a refusal to take direction and an attempt to like reinterpret the show.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, exactly. But I couldn't fire them because there were no understudies. This was like off of Broadway theater. So my not being willing to just like actually embrace the fact that I was an authority figure, at the end of the day, I had no authority. It destroyed my friendships with them. I never spoke to either of them again. You know, like nothing came out of that was good. And another example is, and this is a real pitfall of being a freelance nonfiction writer, sometimes an editor will get in touch with you because they want a sock puppet to say the thing that they would say, but their job does not include writing. In opinion pages, this happens a lot. And so I was contacted by the opinion page of a major newspaper that shall not be named. And the editing process got so fraught that I eventually had to pull the piece. And the reason why was that they had no respect for me as a thinker or writer. They needed a byline that their thoughts could be communicated through, you know? And I was sort of like, hey, when I was like in my early 20s, I might've gone for that. But like, I've written two books. I'm a middle-aged man. Like I have an identity. Like I'm not going to say things that weren't my idea in this column. And eventually I had to pull the piece because there was really no other option in that case.
That sounds awful. I don't appreciate that at all. And I feel like I've been in positions like that too. I mean, there's been audio work and podcasts that I've worked for in which they kind of just wanted a person in the seat. They didn't really want Ronald at all. And I feel like it's hard to be a collaborator if people are saying that they want you, Isaac Butler, but what they really want is someone to write what they want them to write.
Yeah.
You know? And so like, what do you do with that in those cases, except for walk away, pull the piece, like use whatever agency you have?
Yeah. In that case, I was like, you're paying me $250. I am pulling this piece.
I'm like, I'm good. Let's talk about best practices for collaborative work and how we can avoid those pitfalls. I think for me, I think anytime that I've been in a collaboration in which people are setting those expectations up front, like sitting down and saying, this is what we want to do. This is the end goal. And this is how we're going to work. I feel like it's much easier for me to breathe in that environment. You know what it's like? You were just mentioning something about having the big blow up, the big conflict up front. You know what I mean? It's better to start from that place to just be like, look, this is what we're going to do. Let's push and pull. Let's disagree in our first big meeting. And then like, let's kind of like draw it in every single time a little bit more. Because if we set those expectations up front, it's more likely that we'll be successful in our collaborations moving forward than if we don't talk about them at all.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, it's interesting. My wife works in corporate America. And of course, all those norms, they're just part of the job, right? Because you work in an office, there's a clear hierarchy. But even there, if it's multiple people working on a project who are the same level, working out this collaborative stuff is really hard, you know?
Yeah.
And setting those expectations, having those big conversations at the beginning is absolutely helpful. I have this really good friend, Clay McLeod Chapman. He's a playwright and a horror novelist. And when we were in our 20s, we worked together a whole bunch of times. He actually introduced me to my wife. And we had a really great working relationship because we set those kinds of rules in advance. So to give one example, there's a play of his that we co-directed. And you normally think that's a complete disaster, right? It's like two people in charge. What's that about? And I remember really vividly, you know, like he sat me down and said, I need a co-director on this project. To be completely honest, all I want to do is work with the actors on performing the text and on the character work and the work with the text. That's all I really care about. That's what I enjoy doing the most. Let me do that. And I'll kind of have the final say on that. And you will work on the staging and the design and you'll have the final say on that. And we'll disagree sometimes. We'll give each other lots of notes, but we each have our kind of fief that we're in charge of. You know, we actually did that play three times with three different casts, three different groups of designers and everything. And that relationship worked every time. It was very easy because we had already figured out even how we'd handle disagreements in advance, you know?
I mean, and that's honestly the dream. That's the dream of collaboration, is being able to set up the environment where you could be successful in conflict, moving along in a project, and it'd be okay. The fact that you did it three times is evidence that it worked.
And that's a good point you just made about setting the environment. You know, that's a thing I learned a lot as a director, that actually, like, when you're in charge of the collaboration, your job is to create the environment that allows everyone else to do their best work. You know, I mean, there's a lot more to it than that. That's not your only job, but your primary job when you are leading a collaboration is to do that. When you're not leading a collaboration, the job's a little different. But when you're leading it, it's really about how do I create this environment where everyone can bring their best selves and do their best work.
I love that. If everybody took that on in their mind, saying like, I want to do my best work, but I also want to contribute to the environment that allows others to do their best work, I think we'd all be killing it, whether we were leading or not.
Yeah, you're probably right.
We'll be back with some final thoughts about collaboration after this.
Hey, listeners, I just want to remind you that if you are enjoying Working Overtime, please follow us on your podcast app of choice so that you never miss an episode. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, we'd really love you to rate and review the show. It really does help us escape the evil clutches of the algorithm and find new listeners. If Overcast is your app of choice, please hit the star to recommend this episode to others. All right, now back to the show.
So with creative work, especially something like audio production or writing, there are large portions of work that you end up doing in isolation. There could be collaborative aspects to portions of the work, like story and line editing, sound design, etc. But sometimes getting to those parts of the work can be tough. So being able to have a creative partner or a team that you could feel like are in it with you could be an invaluable resource to actually getting the work done. Collaboration, I think, is ultimately a wonderful thing that allows you to share the load and the stakes and get you a little closer to getting the work done. What do you think, Isaac? Any final thoughts?
The one thing I would add is that it's really easy to get confused between a collaborative relationship and a friendship. Sometimes you're collaborating with your friends, and that makes it even more confusing. But, you know, the relationships have a lot in common, and there's an intimacy to both of them, but they are not the same. You can get in a lot of trouble if you try to get the emotional intimacy of a friendship from a collaboration, or the kind of honest, generative, give and take inspiration of a collaboration in one of your friendships. It's not always going to be possible. I've collaborated with friends. I've become friends with collaborators. I'm not saying it's out of bounds. We also all know married couples who are artistic collaborators, but just be clear on what you actually want from the relationship, especially in your own head.
It's funny too, because even in those examples in which married couples are artistic collaborators, they have clear roles typically in those collaborations, which is something you also mentioned before. So I think you hit the nail on the head, Isaac. That's all the time we have for this episode, but let me leave you with one last piece of advice. I think you should follow Working wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have ideas for things we could do better or questions you'd like us to address, we'd love to hear from you. You can send us an email at working@slate.com or give us a ring at 304-933-WORK.
If you'd like to support what we do, sign up for Slate Plus at slate.com/working plus. You'll get bonus content, including exclusive episodes of Slow Burn and Dakota Ring, and you'll be supporting what we do right here on Working.
Thanks as always to Working Overtime's producer, Kevin Bendis, and to our series producer, Cameron Drews. We'll be back on Sunday with a brand new episode of Working. And in 2 weeks, we'll have another Working Overtime. Until then, get back to work.